Ameritech Property Management. How can I help you?
Yeah, I've got two dogs crapping on my lawn. One of them is as big as a house.
Ameritech Property Management.
Okay, so my house smells like something out of a horror movie. It's like something
died. You guys sent me a violation notice in the mail.
It says my
lawn is unsightly. What the hell does that mean?
You guys think that you're going to take my house? You got another thing coming. You're going to put a lien on my house for $20?
That's right. Everything you ever wanted to know about condominium living or deed-restricted communities. Good afternoon and welcome to the Ameritech Connection radio talk show on the TAN Talk Radio Network. Do you live in a condo or deed-restricted community? Do you have issues concerning the do's and the don'ts in your community? Have you been getting into trouble with your community association or management company? Got questions but just can't get the answers? Well, we cover it all and much more right here and right now on the Ameritech Connection. Hi, I'm Mike Perez, the CEO of Ameritech Property Management and your host for the Ameritech Connection. And sitting right next to me is my co-host, the beautiful and talented Miss Sharon Van Winkle. Sharon is also the Director of Marketing for Ameritech Property Management and has over 10 years of experience dealing with these, at times, very difficult situations. So with that in mind and without further ado, here's Sharon.
Thanks, Mike. We have an exciting one-hour show for you here today, so please keep listening and call us with your questions because we have all the answers. The local number is 727-441-3000. That is 727-441-3000. Or you can call us toll-free at 1-866-826-1340. Again, that's 1-866-826-1340. Did you know that Ameritech Property Management manages over 25,000 homes in the Tampa Bay area? And that means we have a lot of experience dealing with a lot of different issues. We've been managing condominium and deed-restricted communities for over 20 years, and now we've decided to host our own radio talk show to discuss and educate you, our listeners, on the do's and the don'ts regarding community living. Oh yeah, not to mention the crazy and off-the-wall stories you're hear only on the Ameritech Connection radio talk show.
Good afternoon, folks. Today we got a very special guest and really a good friend. And we're going to talk all about the responsibility of licensed managers and what is their fiduciary obligation to their board of directors and the homeowners. And some of the things that they might be doing that can either cause them to be reprimanded or even lose their license. That and much more right here and right now on the Ameritech Connection.
Thank you, Mike. Our guest tonight is Michael Guju. He's the owner and managing attorney of Guju Law Firm, founder, CEO of Equity National Title, and former Florida Real Estate Commissioner. Michael is an accomplished attorney with over 30 years' experience in real estate and business law. He has a broad background in finance, legal, and marketing experience in the real estate development, mortgages, and real estate-related services. So let's get started here. Mike, let's talk about what is an LCAM.
And by the way, welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. Welcome. I'm sorry, I didn't do that interview.
You're fine. It's great to be here. Thank you very much for the invitation. It's always an honor to do the radio with you, and I'm glad to be here. And let's have some fun today, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. In fact, Sharon and I were even talking about it. When we go on vacation, we'd like you to host the show for us.
But
Would you do that?
I would be more than pleased to, but I think you want to make sure that I can handle this microphone.
Well, let's get through the show first.
Yes,
I've known you for 20 years. He's also was a co-star for Condo Cops, too. So, I mean, the guy
came again.
Oh,
yeah.
You knew that, right? Was fun.
You knew that, right, Bobby?
You told me about that.
You mean you're not watching it?
No.
I've been checking it out.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to see how this hour goes. Let's start with the first question. What is an LCAM, and how do you get licensed, and what are the requirements?
Well, tremendous. As I said, it's great to be here. And an LCAM is governed by Florida Statutes 468, mm-hmm. and it also has rules that follow from that law, the administrative code. It's pretty straightforward. I mean, if you want to be an LCAM, a licensee, licensed community association manager is what it stands for. It's very clear cut. It's straight out. You have to be 18 years old. You have to be of good, sound character. You have to take 18 hours of classroom hours for mm-hmm. pre-licensure, and then you have to take an exam, and you have to pass the exam.
And what do you got to pass the exam with?
Oh, you got to have at least 70%.
70%.
So, well, and I didn't realize this was going to be a quiz.
And you passed, so you're good.
That's right. And you got 70%.
And then there's
it's the same thing with Freck.
And then there's a fingerprinting process after that.
Yes, there is. Yes, right, there is. So. Yeah.
Now, you did serve on Florida Real Estate Commission for how many years?
5.5 years.
Now, just for the record, for our audience, there's only 7 people, correct, that are serving on the Florida Real Estate Commission.
Correct.
Each of them appointed by the governor.
Yes, appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. So I was appointed and confirmed twice. And of the 7 members, 2 are consumer members, and I was one of the 2 consumer members. That means Florida Real Estate Commission takes care of or administers realtors. And I'm a non-realtor who is sitting on the Florida Real Estate Commission.
Oh, wow.
So I was one of 2.
Okay.
The other were realtors on there.
So now, with that in mind, licensed community association managers are hired or are handled by what department? I know it's the Department of Business and Professional Regulations.
Well, it's a new, department. It's Regulatory Council of Community Association Managers, and I think that was just formed by the Florida Legislature not too long ago, and it fits under the DBPR, which is Department of Business and Professional Regulation. It's different than Department of Real Estate. Department of Real Estate is for realtors, but they have LCAMs have their own department.
Oh,
okay. Well, now that we know what LCAM stands for and how you get licensed and what the requirements are, is there a situation where an LCAM is not needed? Like, for example, let's say an association has 7 units, you know, and they're small and they don't really feel like they need it. Or does it have to do with the annual budget, just say $50,000 and under? So how does that work?
You read the script already, didn't you?
Oh, my gosh. Did I?
Yay, yes, you did.
It's answered. Let's just go to the next question.
Yeah, LCAMs are necessary.
Technically, we know all the answers, Mike.
You're right. Precisely.
Well, that's true, but you're...
Ladies and gentlemen,
man.
I was asked to come online.
I didn't know that.
And ask them questions.
You didn't know that, Bobby?
No, it has to have so many units. First off, the LCAM, the person, the property manager, if they get compensated, they have to be licensed. But also, they have to have over 50 units and a budget of over $100,000. A year. Now that's a budget, so the spending could be more or less. But
right,
it's a budget of $100,000.
So anything less, technically, they don't need a LCAM license to manage the community.
Correct.
Right.
Or less than 50 units.
Right.
Or not receiving compensation. It's compensation or over 50 units and over $100,000 on a budget.
Right. Mike, tell us, what are some of the typical responsibilities of a community association manager? I mean, what is his job description, so to speak, when it comes to managing condos and HOAs and co-ops, timeshares, and that type of thing?
Well, they've got a sort of a mixed bag of responsibilities. Like, for instance, the manager would be associated with controlling a disbursement funding for the association.
Right.
Okay, that's very important because a lot of these funds come in, and there's a lot of funds, so some of these accounts can be very large. Prepare budgets and other financial documents for the association. Give out notices of meetings and conduct association meetings. Very important because they have to be done according to the law.
Right.
If they don't, they got a problem right there. Authorization to spend association petty cash. So sometimes a manager would have authority to spend up to, let's say, $50 or $100 on their own authority without seeking authorization on that. And also coordinating maintenance. I mean, goodness gracious, that could be huge on some of these associations. If they need a new roof, for instance, if they need the outside painted, what have you. You've got to go out and interview contractors, vendors, schedule them, make sure they're doing the right thing, make sure it's approved, what have you. There's a lot to this.
So basically, a manager is going to pretty much be the individual that kind of carries out the board of directors' wishes.
Yeah, facilitates the projects and communicates
but
back to the board.
Actually, most of the boards, as you all know, are made up of laymen, those who are not in real property,
right,
those who have never been in property management, retired postmen, or could be a physician or an attorney. They don't really know what they're doing many times. So the property manager is very important.
So you need that expert to kind of guide them, give them advice, tell them what they need to know.
Poor folks don't get paid either, you know, and they take a lot of their personal time to, and some are retired, and they retired to live a good life, and then they get involved in the community business, and it takes up a lot of their free time.
Sharon, you're absolutely right. most of them, in fact, I would say virtually all of them, do not get paid.
Right.
It's a volunteer position. They're uniquely, let's say, unqualified. I probably shouldn't say that. But
it's like the political arena. I mean, the same thing that you go through. I mean, you get some of these guys that run for office, and when they get elected, the first thing they say is, okay, what do I do now?
Yeah, now what? That's exactly it. So a property manager helps guide them through this. Yes, they're there to carry out the wishes of the board. However, they're also there to be a confidant, to say, you know, I think we should do this and do that and what have you.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, so then what types of properties would hire an LCAM? Like you said, there's a lot of projects going on for that reason, but what other reasons?
Well, there are any developments, and again, it has to be a development, where the a resident owns the property. So, for instance, it could be as varied as a mobile home park. It could be a PUD. Okay. Or an HOA. Most of the time it comes in with a homeowner association or a condo associations where people own their own unit, but yet they have shared common space.
Right.
And that's very important.
Right. What happens when a community needs a board? Let's say there's a requirement for three board members and they can't get any homeowners to volunteer. Boy, what happens?
You know what? That happens so frequently. No one wants to do this. After all, they take the slings and arrows from residents. If something goes wrong, it's your fault, Mr. Board mm-hmm. Member, Mr. President.
And these are your neighbors. That's the worst part of it.
You're absolutely right.
It's a thankless job. There's no
it
question
really
about it.
It is.
Now that you served on the Florida Real Estate Commission for 7 years, obviously.
And five and a half.
Five and a half. All right. Let me make
Not
sure.
Not pufferize here.
Stop kicking me now. What's the difference between a community association manager that manages condominiums and co-ops and community-type properties versus a real estate property manager that manages, like, apartment complexes and stuff like that?
Right. Well, LCAM people are ones who manage those who are owned by the individuals. An apartment building, the tenant is not an owner of the apartment. So consequently, there's only one owner, usually, of the entire building. So that person doesn't need to be licensed. Things like commercial buildings, that does not require an LCAM license. You don't need.
But you do need a real estate license.
Yes, you do. Yes,
right.
You do.
Because now you're dealing with the interior, especially the mm-hmm. apartment complexes. You're dealing with the interior of the units, which, you know, in most cases with condominiums and community associations, we're not dealing with the interior. Correct?
That's correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then the commercial, obviously, you're renovating and getting units ready to rent.
Correct.
On commercial
correct.
Property. Okay.
Correct. But and also family single family buildings.
Right.
You know, you don't need to be an LCAM license.
What are some of the things that LCAMs have been reprimanded for? You know. Or maybe even lost their license, God forbid. You know, obviously things like theft or, you know, but what are, in your experience, what are some of the things that you've come across?
Well, conflict of interest is probably one of the biggest areas. In
okay.
fact, it's been recently addressed in the 2017 amendments to the law.
Right. Those are the recent changes, I think,
that's
that took
correct.
Place, what, in July?
Yes,
July
that
1st,
is correct.
If I'm not
yeah. This year.
Right.
But and they spend a lot of time talking about conflicts of interest.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so the more egregious the conduct it is, the greater the risk of losing your license.
Give us an example of what would be considered to be a conflict of interest.
Yeah.
A property manager, an association would hire someone's relative to come in and do it.
Right.
Or give a contract to a friend, not necessarily a friend, let's say a relative. Or even do the matter themselves. It's anytime you create a conflict between your duties to the board and your self-interest. That's where the conflicts usually come.
Now, I'll play devil's advocate here. Let's just say that everything was fully disclosed.
Mm-hmm.
Is it still considered to be a conflict?
It has to be disclosed and act upon by the board.
Right.
Okay, so disclosure solves 90% of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The rest of the problem is then solved by a vote of the board. But disclosure is very, very important. What the law is attempting to do is they just want full disclosure. They want communicative managers communicating with the residents. If something's going on, disclose it.
So if the board approves and there's a homeowner that doesn't approve and they are very loud about that, what happens? I mean,
You know, well, the board has approved it, so they just move forward and...
Yeah, the board is the one that makes the decision okay. in that.
All right, they've got the final say.
So they disclose it and then vote on it.
Okay, right. All right.
And you know what? The larger the complex, there's always going to be malcontents out there who don't like what the board does.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of the other things, too, is when you got managers that like to practice law. I mean, I heard there's a lot of managers losing their license over that, trying mm-hmm. to give legal advice to
absolutely.
The association. And frankly, you know, I mean, you've got an attorney that the association pretty much retains. Mm-hmm. We use them all the time in my company, and I instruct my managers to... call the attorney. You know, it's kind of like a get-out-of-jail-free card for us.
Absolutely.
If the attorney gives us bad advice, it's not on our dime.
It's not on your dime.
Right.
That's correct.
Right.
And you know what? It's hard enough to practice law for attorneys. If you're not an attorney, don't practice law.
I agree.
Right. Yeah.
And you know what?
Get yourself in trouble.
That's right. You've got an attorney on staff. Most boards do. If they have someone, pay the guy, give an answer, and that's the way to do it. It really is.
Well, it's a protection for the board as well if they follow the direction of their mm-hmm. attorney.
Yeah. I think we've got a couple callers on the line, right, Bobby?
Yes, we do. We have Megan.
Megan, hi. This is Ameritech Connection. How are you this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. What's your question tonight? How can we help you?
The last time I went to a board meeting, I wanted to say something, and the manager... Our manager for our association said that I couldn't ask a question. Can they even tell me that?
Were you rude about it? Did you stand up and say I want to ask a question? Or did
no,
you...
I put my hand up and when they I'm in kindergarten and they said yes and I said I have to ask a question and they said and the manager said no.
So what do you think, Mike?
What do you think?
Well, most boards have a procedure for people in the audience who want to ask questions.
Right.
You know, for instance, they might have a time requirement. In other words, you can't say anything longer than 2 minutes. Anything longer than 2 or maybe 3 minutes uh-huh. is considered a speech and not a question. They may have a sign-in sheet. They may have what is the topic about. Or they may even actually want you to sign up before the meeting so that you could address the board.
Megan, did you notice any policy or procedure they had for people that wanted to talk or speak at the meeting?
Nope. They wouldn't let anyone speak.
Okay. Well, you know,
the
best way to resolve that situation is wait till the next annual meeting comes up. You can do one or two things. Mm-hmm. You can vote for somebody different or otherwise put your name in a hat and get on the board and effect a change. Wouldn't you agree, Mike?
Absolutely. I think that's a great point. And also, do a little bit of legwork and see if they do have rules. Maybe the documents have rules about when someone could address questions or they have a procedures or what have you. Look into that first, and perhaps you weren't following the rules. That
right.
might be the case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the actual manager, not a board member, so I was mm-hmm. a
okay.
little surprised.
Well,
yeah.
you know, you may want to move the management company to Ameritech because they're known to have residents speak at meetings.
So. Absolutely. In fact, get on the board and, you know, and that's what you do. You make sure that you convince the board to make a change or at least allow us to go out there. Thanks, Mike, for the plug, by the way.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You invited me on your show.
Yeah, and let me put a plug in. I'm in charge of marketing, so just have them contact me.
Call the beautiful and talented Sharon Van Winkle.
That's right.
And what do you say?
That's
I understand right, she has a lot of followers on this radio show.
Oh, she does.
And on this podcast. Is that true?
That is true. She's much better looking than either you or I.
Well, yeah, she sounds a lot better.
Even Bobby, you know.
You know, I need to see some checks exchanging there on the table.
Exactly.
I have a face made for radio, so that's why I'm here. Now, Sharon, it's a different story.
Well, Megan, I hope we answered your questions, and sorry for the
sure
bantering.
Did.
All right, well, thank you, and have a great evening.
Right. Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Megan. Hey, Mike, I got a quick question for you. If a manager does give, bad advice, is there anything a board can do either to either reimburse the loss or can they file a complaint against the manager? I mean, let's just say he just gives bad advice.
Well, first off, anyone can file a complaint at any time. The question is whether the substance of the complaint and whether the government will take action regards the complaint. If they give them bad advice, you know, I always chafe at the phrase bad advice because advice is very rarely good or bad. If they give something that is absolutely totally wrong and it's provable, that's one thing. But most times what they call bad advice is just advice that in retrospect, didn't turn out to be that good of advice, but at the time was well-meaning and good advice.
Right.
So when they say bad advice, I'm hesitant to say, oh yeah, they could lose their license. For the most part, they're not going to. No.
Well, let's talk a little bit about culpable negligence.
That's something different. At that point, then you're starting to hit standards or gross negligence or some of the different standards that we have. When they hit that area, when they start hitting those legal standards, yeah, that's perhaps actionable, not only against their license, but against perhaps the association company. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So is that bad advice illegal?
Well, again, bad advice is not, the phrase is not okay. Black or white. It's shades of gray. So is it illegal? Yeah, in retrospect, usually it's not good advice. It probably is not illegal, though. No, because it was well-meaning at the time and informed, okay. But it turned out to be bad. You were just erroneous.
But now let's just say they're just dumb and they're just giving bad information. You know, like for an example, let's say the statute says a notice requirement is 30 days, and they tell the board it's 14 days, and they're just absolutely wrong. Now, that's somewhat a culpable action, correct?
Yes it is. And moreover, that's provable. If
right.
someone stands up and says, you don't need to give notice for this particular board meeting or this particular action, yeah, that's problematic, 100%. And at that point, then you got to get a new manager or a new management company or
well,
something.
That's when you call Ameritech, correct?
Absolutely.
Again, that's a good plug. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Please keep listening. We're going to be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Affordable Work Orders Incorporated is based out of Palm Harbor, Florida, and services all the surrounding areas. Affordable Work Orders provides excellent handyman services such as janitorial, maintenance, pressure cleaning, landscape care for common areas in HOAs and condominium communities, and much, much more. With great reviews and friendly service, you can depend on Affordable Work Orders to get the job done right the first time. Our number is 727-709-4895 or visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Affordable Work Orders Inc.
Mitchell Insurance Services has been providing superior insurance coverage and outstanding customer service since 1971. We specialize in the unique insurance needs of community associations and homeowners associations all across the state of Florida. Contact us today for a free policy assessment to ensure you have the right coverage and are getting the credits that you deserve. Contact us today at 727-360-8190 or visit us online at mitchellinsurancefl.com. Ensuring your community since 1971.
Don't stress it. Call Innovative Roofing. We handle all projects from minor repairs to re-roofing, as well as new installations. We pride ourselves for both quality and reliability, working hard to build lasting relationships with our clients. Innovative Roofing, building a reputation for being a company who makes a difference. Give us a call today, 813-909-0400. Again, that number is 813-909-0400.
Allegiance Development is a family-owned and operated business offering quality general contracting services in the greater Tampa Bay area. We offer a wide range of services including commercial and residential construction, permitting, community stormwater management and repair, asphalt paving and maintenance, concrete restoration, disaster recovery, and much more. Our commitment and dedication applies to all projects, large or small. We have the expertise to offer fast and affordable solutions for all of your general contracting needs. Feel free to contact us at 727-584-1370 or visit our website at allegiancedevelopment.us.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Ameritech Connection. For those of you just tuning in, our guest today is attorney Mike Guju. He's the former Florida Real Estate Commissioner, and we're talking about do's and don'ts concerning your property manager. So what we're going to do is because we have so many fans out there on hold with questions, we're going to take some callers first before we go into the questions, okay?
Sure. So Mary is next up on the
Mary.
Line.
Hi, Mary. This is Sharon. You've got the Ameritech Connection. What's your question?
Hi, Mary.
Hi. I love the show. You really pinpoint some important information. And you were talking about...
You are one of our fans. You call here often, yes. Don't you, Mary?
Yes. I thought I recognized your voice.
Yep.
That Boston accent of yours, right?
Yep.
It almost sounds like it's from Lynn.
No. I won't say what city because I don't want to commit.
All right, no problem.
What's your question, Mary?
All right, you were talking about, you know, the property manager giving advice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, our property manager gives a lot of legal advice, and most of the time it's wrong. And, you know, what can the board do about it? And they seem to think that, you know, whatever he says is correct. And like the other caller said, that the board won't let them speak at a meeting.
Yeah.
Well, the board is like willing to take our questions, but the manager won't let them, you know, will say, nope, you know, you can't ask any questions. But as far as this legal issue, the board can get into serious trouble and get sued. And so what can I do about that?
What do you think, Mike?
Mary, you're bringing up some great points. Number one is this. You've got a problem manager there. And if the management company is not educating and training the manager well enough, then really you need to go look elsewhere for competent advice. I would talk to make sure the other board members know that you have an attorney there for a reason. I would talk to the attorney and just say, this manager seems to be giving legal advice, which I think should be better coming from you. And see if you can't get the manager or the attorney to jump in and giving legal advice.
Well, that is one of the most reprimanding incidents.
Absolutely.
For LCAMs in Florida right now is, yep, when you got LCAMs giving legal advice. I mean,
yeah,
and there's no need for it neither.
Yeah. Should I call their the management company and see what they can do?
I mean,
go over his head.
I would think I would call the management company, don't you think, Mike?
I agree. And also, I would call the attorney. If the association has an attorney, let the attorney know.
Well, the attorney's probably not going to talk to a homeowner.
No.
Yeah, right. Well, that's true.
Yeah, so
but if you...
You could put a letter together and just tell them that, you know, we feel like this manager is overstepping his authority by giving legal advice. And you can also file a complaint against the manager. I mean, you know, you can go in there, and there's also, you can record meetings. Mm-hmm. The statutes say, right, Mike?
That's correct.
The statutes say that you can record meetings, and certainly if he's given legal advice on a recording, I mean, that's a...
That's problematic. Well, that's unauthorized practice of law.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and the bar comes down hard on that stuff.
Right, so, right.
Yeah, but you do want to get it in writing. Like Mike said,
would be like the DBPR, report it to him to the DBPR.
You could do that, but also you could go to the Florida Bar.
Yeah, and they'll take it too.
Absolutely. Mm,
that's true. That's a good point.
Yeah, the bar jealously guards their territory.
Yeah.
They want attorneys giving advice.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm. So I hope we've helped you, Mary.
All right, yeah, sounds good. And like I said, I love the show, and I love asking questions.
Thank you.
Pick your brains.
Yes.
Well, Mary,
Keep up the good work.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Keep,
you have a
keep
good
listening
evening.
And keep calling in, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right.
Bye now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
All right. We have several more callers on the line, so let's take another one right now, okay?
Sure. We have Caroline next.
Caroline. Hi, Caroline.
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's your question tonight?
Well, we had a budget meeting notice mailed out. And it looks like our manager went by Florida statute rules instead of our bylaws. We're supposed to have 30 days notice for budget meetings. So my question is can we get reimbursed for the manager's mistake?
So wait a minute. Let me clarify. The statutes say 14 days notice, but your documents say 30 days, correct?
Yes, apparently they're more stringent than the statute.
Right. So based on that, they have to follow the documents, right, Mike?
Yes, they do, unless the Florida statute makes it clear that it overrides those documents.
Well, yeah, it doesn't. In that particular case, I think the documents are a lot more stringent than typically most associations.
Absolutely.
Will follow the more stringent requirements as opposed to Florida statutes. And likewise, if they're less restringent, and at which point Florida statute says something different, then obviously Florida statutes would prevail. But
our attorney caught it, and we had to mail out another mailing and spend another $300. So I would like to know if we can get reimbursed.
Most, I understand, and Mike and Sharon will confirm this or dispute this, I think most contracts that boards have with management companies cover this or answer these type of questions. If they do something that's incorrect, most management companies will say, okay, that's our fault, we'll pay for it, and that type of thing.
Yes, typically so. I mean, there's typically a hold harmless indemnification clause in the agreement, which, you know, technically they could probably say, no, we're not going to reimburse you, and probably be legally correct in saying that, consistent with their contract. But it's certainly not going to...
gender support with the board.
Yes.
The board will
exactly.
not.
Or maintain that positive relationship
right.
between the board.
Yeah.
And it is such a relationship type business.
Yeah. So at Ameritech, we're just say, all right, because we want to keep that relationship going and in a good way, we would just.
Well, first, let me clarify. We would never, ever, right, Mike?
Yeah.
Right,
Sharon? Never
make a mistake
make
like that.
Make that mistake.
Right, Bobby?
Correct.
All right, you got your check, right?
Okay. You did.
Okay. All right, good.
Well, Caroline, I hope we answered your questions. And
yeah, thank you for calling. We appreciate that.
All right.
Thank
good
you.
Question.
Very helpful.
All right.
Mike, since we've got so many questions coming in concerning managers doing stuff that they shouldn't be doing, can a manager draft and prepare amendments related to the documents? I mean, or is that something an attorney must do?
No, a manager can draft the documents. They want to stay away from giving legal advice, but they can. That's actually one of the duties of a manager, is help draft documents like that.
And then obviously it has to go over to the attorneys to put the legalese in there and make sure, you know, but to draft the preliminaries is what you're saying.
Absolutely. What they do is they sit down and they frame the issue. They help talk the board through where they are and where they want to go,
right.
Put together perhaps an action list or a bullet point outlining things. And then, you know, they could try their hand at putting the verbiage there. But, you know, it is best done by the attorney. But, yeah, they could start the process.
Right.
Okay, so this is a good question. Does the manager have the legal authority to interpret the documents, rules, and regs? I mean, shouldn't they get legal advice?
Yes, they should go out and get legal advice. Now, listen, everyone can look at a word and try to determine what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they could look at the context and what have you. But when you start doing legal interpretations, when you get beyond the plain meaning of exactly what the word says, when you get to the nuances of maybe conflicting clauses in documents, go to the attorney. I mean, everyone can, we can all read and we can all determine what the language says.
Well, it is ambiguous sometimes. I mean,
it is vague and ambiguous, or it conflicts, or right. there's, you know, there's a deeper meaning that could be there.
Right.
Send it to the attorney. Let them do it.
Okay. What about drafting certificates of outstanding assessments? Can a manager do that?
Yes, they can. They could go ahead and do that. It's again, part of their duties of administering things and what have you.
It's kind of like the estoppel process, correct?
Correct.
What is an estoppel? I mean, you know, I mean, probably a lot of our listeners have no idea when we're talking these legal terms. Now you own a title company as well, and you do many, many closings, which, by the way, you have a very good title company. We've had a lot of title closings. We had a lot of closings with the Guju Law Firm and Equity National Title, and I
correct.
Just want to say that your girls there are just really, really good and smart.
Very knowledgeable.
I don't know where they get all that knowledge.
I don't know either.
Top notch. They all deserve a raise.
I appreciate.
Yes.
Oh, now I'm in
they
trouble.
They deserve
here.
A raise.
Okay. All right. I appreciate you saying that.
Let's change the subject
that.
Now, right?
Yeah. Let's change the topic. Let's talk about the Tampa Bay Devil Race. Thank you very much for saying that. We try very hard. I do have a very good staff. I'm very lucky to have them. Try to take care of them, and you know, we have our moments. What is an estoppel? An estoppel is a document that one person gives to another person, and the letter outlines the current status of the relationship between two parties. For instance, if someone is selling their condo, the title company, my title company, my law firm, would send a letter to the association, and we'd say, what is currently owned, or what's the current status of the relationship between the owner and the association? Are they current on their dues? Do they have any outstanding violations? Are there any other major problems? Have they not done something, or have they done something they shouldn't have done? And that's what an estoppel letter does. It outlines exactly what the status is, so that, for instance, a closing can take place.
Right.
Okay.
So that the buyer knows exactly what they're doing. The title company can collect money for the seller and pay it off at closing.
Yeah. Right. Oh, wow. You explained that to where even I understand it. Right. Thank you.
Oh, come on. Bob, you knew that before.
Bobby's yawning over there. Bobby, you got some callers?
Oh, yes. Collars. Collars.
He needs a ding dong. Get him a ding dong.
Yeah, there you go.
Carol is next.
Hey, Carol. You're welcome to the Ameritech Connection. You're on the air. What's your question?
Hi, thank you very much. Nice to be listening to you guys.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question about, from what I understand, I don't make it to a lot of the, you know, the board meetings for my association. However, I have been to a few, and I'm a little confused because it sounds to me like our manager, I don't know if she prepares or just requests and reviews contracts for our association, like they're, you know, like a painting project or landscaping. And I'm just wondering if managers are allowed to do that, or is that something that should be done by an attorney?
So let me clarify. What you're saying is that, you know, if the board's going to select a painting contractor, for an example, this manager would actually prepare and write the contract?
Well, I'm a little confused. I don't know if they're writing it or if they're just reviewing contracts and making recommendations.
Well,
Michael, why don't you go through the process of the way it should be done,
right,
in this case?
Well, certainly they're allowed to review the contracts, obviously, and mm-hmm. advise the board. I mean, that's their position.
Yeah, that's their job.
But to actually write the contract, Mike, I mean, isn't that practicing law?
Absolutely. They can't write a contract. But, Mike, what's the process? Let's start from the beginning. What's the process for getting a painting contractor, and how does it progress?
Well, all right, let's just take painting for an example, all right? The first thing we're going to do is we're going to have the project with specifications written, mm-hmm. for paint specifications written for that particular project, and then we're going to put it out for bid. When those bids come back, at that point, the manager has the legal capacity and the authority to review those bids and then advise the board as to, you know, what recommendations that he or she might make as the property manager. Now, to actually write the contract, you know, that is, I think, and I think you would agree with me, Mike, is illegal practicing of law.
Absolutely. They can't do that. But the manager does have a role in advising, reading it through, working the board through the process.
Yeah, they depend on the manager for that.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So how do you recommend that I find that, you know, that how would I inquire to find out if the manager is writing contracts?
Well, you have the right as a homeowner to request for that information, the painting contracts and everything else. And then I would just send he or her an email and say, look, who wrote this contract? Is this the painting contractor's contract, or is this something that the property manager wrote? Now, and you could also call the painting contractor and say, hey, look, did you write this contract? You know, I mean, there's a number of ways of finding out.
But I don't have, so I could ask for, can I ask for copies of the contract?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You've got a legal, right, Mike? She's got a legal and obligation. They have a legal obligation to provide her with the information that she requests.
Absolutely. And also, if you're a regular attendee at the board meetings, you will start to see characteristics of the board. You'll start to see the contract comes in, and when they start talking about the contract, it'll become clear usually where the contract came from and how active the manager is in reviewing it or even writing it. Doing that, writing it is clearly improper. But you could get copies of all the documents.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, listen, I hope we've answered your question, Caroline.
Yeah, thank you very much,
thank
Carol.
Thank you so much.
Oh,
Carol,
okay.
I'm sorry. Thank you so much for calling
in. I think
in.
That was Bobby's mistake.
Have a great night. Thank you.
Thank you, though.
Bobby, really?
Caroline and a Carol in a row.
You were yawning at the time.
No cigar.
Well, listen, folks, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Keep listening. We will be right back in 2 minutes, I promise.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
When you need legal help, you want a lawyer you can trust, someone with experience, knowledge, wisdom, and compassion. At Pilk & Associates, we pride ourselves at providing you with the personal attention and consideration your legal issues deserve. We can help plan long-term goals for your family or your business and handle unexpected legal issues that arise suddenly. We're a full-service law firm with nearly 3 decades of legal experience. We are dedicated to serving your legal needs. Please call for a free consultation at 813-759-3285 or feel free to email us at law@pilka.com. We look forward to serving your legal needs.
Sun Paints and Coatings is your hometown paint store, family owned and operated for over 40 years. Sun Paints has 6 locations throughout Hillsborough, Pinellas, and Pasco counties. Sun Paints and Coatings manufactures Daico brand paints in Tampa and is an authorized distributor of Benjamin Moore and PPG paints. Sun Paints and Coatings works closely with property management companies, HOAs, condo associations, and individual homeowners, helping ensure a great project. Trust the experts at Sun Paints and Coatings. Sun Paints is the best paint under the sun. Visit us at sunpaintsandcoatings.com.
Hey, Frank, thanks for inviting us to the pool party.
Hey! What is that?
Oh, my pool? Yeah, I'm going for a natural Florida wildlife kind of thing.
Frank, no, man, you gotta call Gulfside Pools.
Daddy, watch me!
Jimmy, stop playing on that alligator.
Oh, it's not that bad.
Frank, it's bad. Gulfside does pool cleaning and repairs for commercial or residential. With over 50 years experience, they'll make your pool look, well, like a pool again. Call 813-626-3539. 813-626-3539. Or go to their website, gulfsidepools.com.
Do you serve on the board of a condominium association? Or how about a homeowners association? Here's a well-known fact. Page & Company are probably the best accounting firm for community associations. With over 18 years of experience specializing in audits, reviews, compilations, and tax returns, you must get a quote from Page & Company for your association's financial reporting requirements. So give Page & Company Certified Public Accountants a call at 727-726-2785. Get the personal service you deserve.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Ameritech Connections. For those of you just tuning in, our guest today is attorney Michael Guju, former Florida Real Estate Commissioner, and we're talking all about the do's and the don'ts concerning your property manager. Here's a question for you, Mike. It might be an obvious question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. Can a manager, if he discloses, get paid a referral fee for, let's say, maybe a painting contractor who's doing work?
Oh, boy. I tell you what, I would never suggest the manager do that. I mean, it's absolutely too much of a conflict.
But if he told the board of directors and says, look, you know, I'm recommending ABC, hopefully there's not an ABC painting company out there, but I'm recommending.
Yeah.
There probably is.
Yeah,
you know that.
I know. You want to be in the beginning of the alphabet,
yeah,
right?
I'm recommending QYZ. How's that?
That's right.
Painting like company that out there. Bobby, there can't be a
KYZ?
KYZ, I don't know. Anyways, I'm recommending.
It's in Key West.
28
KYZ. Yeah, Key West YZ, yeah.
And he tells the board and explains to the board that they're going to pay a commission or a referral fee for recommending them. I mean, what's your position on that? It's fully disclosed. Now, I agree with you. I'm not advocating it, but I'm just playing devil's advocate with you. So don't give me that cross-eyed look, Mike, because I know what you're
thinking.
Would Ameritech ever let their manager receive a referral fee like
absolutely that? Not. In fact, My managers know they would be terminated and fired on the spot. But there's managers out there doing it all the time.
I know. Well, first off, it's a horrible practice. Even if it's disclosed, even if it's voted on and accepted by the board, are they allowed to do it? I guess if it's disclosed and voted on a board, yes, they can. But honestly, what a bad practice. There's no circumstances that I can think of that would justify a referral fee like that.
Okay.
All right, so I have a question for you. Can the manager implement new rules and regulations concerning that condo or HOA property?
Absolutely, and that's one of the manager's main jobs.
Some managers...
Like his own.
Yeah, some managers...
Oh, you mean the manager's own rules?
Yeah, can the manager actually implement the rules? Yeah, let's say he doesn't like dogs, you know, and he sees these little yappy dogs running around, and he's saying, no, you can't have your dogs out here in the park or
the
pool.
Are the yappy dogs cute? Because my son has a yappy dog.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yappy dogs are rarely cute.
That it would depend on whether he was cute or not as to whether he could do it.
No, actually.
No, I really.
I see your point. Your question is, can the manager implement their new rules?
Yes.
Right.
No, they can't do that. The rules and regulations are set out many times in nauseating detail. It's voted on. It's accepted, voted on by the board and the community. The manager is there to read the rules and faithfully implement them and safeguard them and make sure people follow them. That's what it's about. No, actually, the board, a board member can't implement new rules themselves either. They have to.
That's a good point.
They have to get the board's approval, draft them up, get it approved, and many times the entire association. Mm-hmm. So the rules or regulations are there for everyone to follow, and that includes the manager.
Okay.
I agree.
Thank you for that.
If a board of directors is violating their own documents, or let's say the law, what should a property manager do? Now, that happens all the time.
Yes, we got
boards that are on that get elected a lot of times by proclamation, as you well know. Nobody else wants the job. Mm-hmm. So they don't understand, even though there's classroom requirements. I mean, there's a certificate that they have to require, but they don't go. And they start violating their own documents and or the rules.
No, everyone has to follow the rules.
Should a property manager do in a case like that?
I think the property manager should emphasize a couple of things. Number one is they should look at the rules and say, these are the rules. This is the way the plain meaning of the rules are. This is what it says. Number two is this. When you go to enforce the rules, you want to make sure you enforce them fairly, consistently across the board to everyone.
Right.
You don't want to enforce the rules against a neighbor that you don't like.
Right.
You don't want to not enforce the rules, because once you start not enforcing the rules, that creates a situation where it might be waived. If the board does not enforce the rules, and then at some later point try to enforce the rules, they could run into legal problems.
Sure, that's a failure to enforce.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's right. Waiver.
Right.
So in that situation, if I was the property manager, I would say everyone has to follow the rules. All the residents, all the owners, all the board members, everyone consistently applied to all the time.
Okay. Thank you for that. Bobby, we have a caller on the line.
Yes. Last we have Kimberly.
Kimberly, welcome to the Meritech Connection. What's your question this evening?
Well, I do have a do and don't question.
Oh, okay. Sounds easy.
Our manager yells and uses profanity when he talks to homeowners. Is there something in the license
professional
law that he can do that?
Oh, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's very unprofessional, but...
Well,
but it has happened. I own a lot of units out there, and I own units in other communities that I mm-hmm. don't manage. Mm-hmm. And I've had to deal with some of these other management companies' managers. And I'll tell you, man, I just, you know, if I had any of my managers doing something like that, well, Sharon, you know, they mm-hmm. would be gone.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's Meritech standards.
I know, but
there's a lot of management companies.
High standards, of course.
Absolutely.
But I think Kimberly's question is there anything in the law?
In the licensing laws.
In the licensing laws that say that there's some sort of ethics?
Yes.
That, you know, you can't call somebody up and start using profanity and hang up on them and be rude. I mean, obviously, the first thing you want to do, Kimberly, is get on the board. Fire the management company and the manager and hire us as your management company. And that, I promise you, will never happen. Right, Mike?
Absolutely. That's
right,
the
right,
first
Sharon?
Thing if you
right,
can do.
Mike.
But in their interim.
That's right, Sharon.
Sorry, that's a, you know, private joke there.
But in the interim. Am I disturbing you two?
No, you're fine.
Okay. But in the,
you're interrupting a little bit, but continue.
But in the interim, every licensee has to follow the ethics. And the ethics are general admonitions saying this is the kind of conduct we want you to have.
Certainly conduct unbecoming that of a licensed community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Yeah, just uncalled for.
You know, swearing in those situations is usually the last refuge of a weak mind.
Right.
And so, frankly, if you could get rid of the manager, and frankly, if the management company permits that kind of stuff, I'd get rid of them, too.
Yeah, I again, mm-hmm. would like to put a plug in for our company, Meritech. So maybe you could encourage your board members to look to us for better management and more professional management.
Yeah, I love your show, too.
Thank you. Well,
thank you. But Kimberly, what I would do is I would probably write a letter and address it to the CEO or the director of operations of the management company. Let them know what the manager is doing. And mm-hmm. if that continues, then I would file a complaint with the Department of Business and Professional Regulations.
In a lot of cases, they don't know that the manager is doing that, has that behavior.
Correct.
So,
would you recommend taping them if they start swearing in a meeting?
Well, you know, you could do that. I mean, if they're in a openly, publicly, properly noticed meeting, which you can record.
You can record.
Certainly, you could tape them and, you know, and submit that to the Florida Real Estate Commission.
Well, you know, whenever you have pictorial or audio evidence of wrongdoing, that makes a strong statement. So you want to get your evidence in order.
Right.
All right. Kimberly, I hope we've answered all your questions and hope that you have a great night.
You have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Kimberly.
All right. We just have a few minutes left here in the show, so I'd like to ask a question. If a person discloses that they're related to the managers, we kind of touched on this earlier, or board members, can they actually work for the association? Is that go back to the, if you disclose it? And
well, disclosure solves 90% of the problems, and then the board has to vote on it. The statutes, the amendment in earlier this year, have a lot of conflict provisions in it. And it goes through and answers them. And yes, I mean, if you do properly disclose it and vote on it, you tell them exactly what it's about and what have you, yeah, you can. But again, you know, it's problematic. It can be problematic.
Well, you know, my position is you really want to stay away from that. You know? I mean,
that's the best practice.
Absolutely. This way you don't have, I mean, if it looks like there's something going on that's fishy, it probably is fishy.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
All right, I have another question because this is interesting. I understand that associations over 150 units are now required by law to have a website. So let's talk a little bit about that. What's the reasoning behind that?
Well, what the statute talks about is digital copies. The statute requires the posting of digital copies.
Oh, okay.
So that's documents that have been scanned, probably saved in PDF, and put online for everyone to see.
Interesting, Mike. Interesting.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, folks. Well, next week we have Ms. Karen Browder. She's the Chief Financial Officer of Ameritech Community Management. And we're going to talk about the responsibilities of management companies concerning the accounting for community associations. And for an example, how does a management company handle paying their bills? Who's authorized on the bank accounts, and what about delinquencies? And most importantly, the monthly financial reporting requirements that a management company has to its board of directors and even the unit owners. That and much more next week on the Ameritech Connection. Keep listening, folks. We'll be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Ameritech Community Management is a local management company servicing the Tampa Bay area for over 20 years. We are proud of our company and continue to provide professional and courteous service to our clients. After 20 years, we still manage our very first community association. If you are in need of a top-notch community management team for your property, give us a call today, 727-726-8000. That's 727-726-8000. Or visit our website at ameritechcompanies.com.
Hey, you.
Who, me?
Not you, the hot one.
Hi, what can I do for you?
Aren't you that lady that's on that radio show called the Ameritech Connection?
Why, yes, I am. We're live every Thursday at 5 p.m. on Tan Talk Radio Network. Right, Mike?
That's right, Sharon. Live in a condo or homeowners association? You have issues. How about questions? We cover it all and more. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m.
What time again?
That's 5 p.m. every Thursday on Tan Talk Radio Network, 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM.
Well, that wraps up our show for today. Sharon and I both would like to thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, without you, Ameritech has no connection.
That's so true. And we also appreciate all the feedback and all the listeners that take the time to call in and ask the questions. So don't forget, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m., it's the Ameritech Connection on the Tan Talk Radio Network, 1340 a.m. and 106.1 FM.
And if you're looking for a good property management company, look no further. Give us a call at Ameritech. I promise you, you won't be sorry. We would greatly appreciate the opportunity to become your next property management company.
So don't forget, every Thursday between 5 and 6 p.m., it's the Ameritech Connection.
Thanks, everybody. We'll talk again next week.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City Tampa Bay WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.